If you got a program when you came in, you'll notice there's an event coming up on November 6th called A Place of Knowing. And I'd really like to draw your attention to that and to something that we'd love to invite everyone to. One of the things we've been wrestling a lot with is how do we take the discussion that we have here on a Sunday morning and the teachings that we have here on Sunday morning and help take it farther for people that want to go farther. And so we've created this opportunity on November 6th called A Place of Knowing. And Steve Dougherty is going to be teaching and leading through that. And so there'll be three different key sessions. There'll be some breaks in between, but for those 3 hours on Saturday morning, just teaching through a lot of the foundational ideas and philosophical ideas that really set the framework and the foundation for the stuff that we discuss in here from the scriptures. And so just this is a great opportunity to kind of roll up your sleeves if you want to and kind of dig farther and ask questions, and there'll be a chance for dialogue and different kinds of things to wrestle through that together. And so if that's something that you're interested in, we'll definitely invite you to take advantage of that. And there's information in the program there about how you can sign up for that and to be a part of that. Also in the program, just as a reminder that date night is coming up, and date night's for an event that we create and design for married couples. And so I really want to encourage you to do that. You can get your go online and CrossPoint datenight.org and get your tickets for that. And try to do that as soon as you can if you want to go. I know for many of you the greatest obstacle might be babysitting. And so just want to encourage you that one of the reasons we have two nights is so that we can help one another out. And that's what we do as a community, that we help. For those of us that are married, we fight for each other's marriages. And it's throughout our community. When we have people and we recognize the value of healthy marriages, then we would participate and find ways to fight for that. And so it can be simply, hey, I'll take your kids one night and you take our kids the next night. Or, hey, I don't have kids, but we'll take your kids so that you guys can go. Or, yeah, just whatever it looks like, that we as a community, we do what communities do. And we fight for each other's health, and we try to help one another out in that way. So just encourage you to do that and grab your tickets online as soon as you can. But back to today. I found myself, and I have all day, just very grateful, as I'm sure that you are, for Dawn's willingness to share her story with us as a community. And primarily that she's willing to share it with us while she's still in the middle of a very difficult journey. While she's very much in the rawness of it and the emotion of it. And for giving us a window into what she's discovering along the way as she walks this difficult path. Because even though each of our own circumstances may be different and unique, many of us, we understand what it feels like when we found ourselves catapulted into our own difficult journeys at one time or another, where you found yourself on a path that you never imagined seeing yourself on before. Where one day you were just informed, you know what, your position is being eliminated. And in an instant, everything changed for you. Or where your spouse walked through the door and announced, you know what, I don't think I love you anymore. Or the doctor said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but the tumor is malignant. And you heard those words, and it sent you on a path that you never imagined yourself on. Or where the voice on the other end of the phone line said, Mom, Dad, I'm pregnant. Or it was, Dad, I'm at the police station. Or it was, Ma'am, there's been an accident. Or maybe you were sat down and you remember being told, we're moving. Or your mother and I are getting divorced. And you remember those words so clearly, and you remember the path that it set your life on. And when moments like that happen to us, suddenly we find ourselves and our worlds turned upside down and smack in the middle of uncertainty. And it's in those moments, understand, it's in those moments when the scriptures, what's in this book, becomes all the more relevant to our lives. Because understand, the stories and the narratives and the letters and the poems contained within these scriptures were birthed out of times of extraordinary uncertainty. That you see, the scriptures aren't reflective of lives of people where people just follow God and everything went perfectly. Where the graph of their life always seemed to go up and to the right. Where they were the kind of people who always got the job and then the next day always seemed to get the raise and then get the bonus. And where they were the kind of people whose house always sold the first day it was on the market. Or where the word divorce was never uttered and their kids always got straight A's and their kids got full scholarships to college. And they would go on to play professional sports and then afterwards become a doctor just because they could until they saved up enough money to retire early and then just play golf or focus on their charity work, whatever they felt like was more appealing at the moment. You see that? That's not the story of the people we find in the scriptures. It's not our story and it's not their story, but rather what we keep discovering as we read this book is we find stories of people like a young teenager in Genesis named Joseph who finds himself thrown into a well. And he's at the bottom of this well, and at the top of the well, he overhears his brothers debating this question: should we sell him or should we kill him? Now, understand that all of us at times have different problems with our siblings, you know? And we bicker and we fight about different things. But understand, his brothers were debating, do we sell him or do we kill him? And then Joseph gets sold into slavery. He gets accused of a rape that he didn't commit. He gets thrown into prison. And yet, as you read through the story of his life, all throughout the pages of Scripture, the Scriptures say that through all of that and in all of that, it says God was with Joseph. God was with him. Or you find stories of people like King David, the same David that wrote the psalm that we've been walking through the last few weeks. And King David awakes one morning to discover that his son Absalom has secretly raised up an army to overthrow him, to conquer him, to replace him as king and kill him. And again, understand, this isn't, I can't get my kid to do his homework, you know? This isn't, I can't get my daughter to pick up her room or to make her curfew on time. This is David's son is conspiring to kill him, to murder him. And yet, as you read through the story, what you discover is that God was there in the middle of all of it. And that God was with David. Or as you keep turning the pages, you read about a young Israelite woman in Egypt who gives birth to a baby boy, and she discovers that the ruling Pharaoh has issued an order that all the Israelite baby boys in Egypt were to be murdered because he felt like that there were already too many Israelites in the land. And so you see this young mom forced with a decision, and she chooses to put her baby into a basket, and she sets him adrift into the Nile River, choosing to take her chances with the snakes and the crocodiles in the Nile River rather than taking the chance of her baby boy in the hands of Egyptian butchers. And as you read through the story, you discover that God was there and that this baby was found by an Egyptian princess, and she named him Moses, who would many years later become the man through which God would deliver the Israelites, his people, out of slavery in Egypt. But you see, before she knew the end of the story, before she had the privilege of hindsight, God was there. He was present. He was at work. And over again throughout the Bible, when it seems like things have spun out of control, when it seems like there's nothing but backwards momentum, when it seems like God is absent, whether that's been for days or weeks or months or sometimes years and decades upon decades, what we discover is that God was still there. Even in the midst of great uncertainty, he was there. And he was present and he was active, even if the surrounding circumstances didn't lend evidence to that reality. He was still there. And it's easy to read the scriptures today, only with this perspective of the hindsight of thousands of years. But often where we can find the greatest relevance and the strongest reminders of hope is by putting ourselves in the midst of what these people were experiencing at the time. Rather than through the lens of hindsight, but to put ourselves in their situation when things seemed hopeless for months, for years, when it seemed like all that was happening was that life was falling apart. If you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to the Psalms once again. If you have a Bible, you kind of open up to the middle. You'll find the Psalms somewhere in there and then flip around till you find Psalm 23. If you don't have a Bible, put the words on the screen behind us and you can follow along. that way. But the last few weeks, we've been walking through this Psalm 23, this iconic passage of Scripture, and we've been walking through it verse by verse, and we've been inviting all of us to just reflect on it. We've invited us to memorize it verse by verse, you know, through the week. There's only 6 verses, and just saying, what would it look like if we lived with this as a community? What would it look like if we filtered our attitude and our experiences through the truths that this, you know, psalm reflects? And just see what would happen in us if we did that. So David writes Psalm 23, verse 1, again, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores, he repents, he returns my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness, of beauty, of grace and goodness for his namesake, not for my own, so that I could somehow be elevated and acclaimed, but for his name." And then he writes this, verse 4, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Now, this is perhaps the most famous verse in the entire psalm, probably because it's the line or verse that we hear quoted most often at funerals. And as a result, it causes us to default to thinking that this verse is primarily about a promise for after we die, that what David is talking about is something that happens much later on, off in the distant future, in another time, in another place. But what we keep coming back to since week one as we walk through this psalm together is that David, all throughout this psalm, is very much talking about life in the present. He's not talking about life in another time that doesn't have any relevance to us now. He's talking about life in the here and the now, not something after death. Now, the main thing that causes us to assume that this is about another time or place is understandably the phrase, "even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." And it paints this picture in our mind. We kind of default to this image where, you know what, I'm passing through death, and on the other side of death, you know, is this thing that God is going to usher us through. And while that is true, and that has great relevance to our future, what he's talking about is the now. And so there's a couple things to note as we kind of shift some of the imagery that's in our head into what David is referring to. And one of those is that when it says, notice it says the valley of the shadow of death. It doesn't say the valley of death itself. It says the shadow of death. And a shadow is an imitation of the real thing. A shadow is a copying of the real thing, but it's not the thing itself. And that makes sense to us because many times what we're experiencing or what we're going through, the circumstances that we find ourselves walking through, can feel like a death. It can feel like something inside of us is dying and is being killed inside of us, even though we literally haven't died. But secondly, the Hebrew word that was originally written there, this was originally written in Hebrew. And so what translators have done is they've taken the Hebrew words and they've translated them into English. And there's a Hebrew word that's got translated into the phrase shadow of death. And that's one word in Hebrew. It's called zamavet. Zamavet. Now, just to kind of hit a pause button there for a minute, because I think there's at times, especially in this last series, Steve and I both have tried to walk through a lot of different words and the kind of understanding of the word and the layers of the word. And for some of you, that really kind of, you know, is like, I just don't really care all that much. And for other of you, that's like, man, that really helps me understand, you know, the text, and it opens up new insights and new things. But sometimes I think people default to thinking that Steve and I have gone through years of Hebrew school or something, you know, or Greek school to be able to do all this. And we haven't. And it's just knowing where to look many times. And so this is something that, man, I'd love for all of you to do. Not that you just depend on myself or Steve to kind of explain this, but if that's stuff you enjoy and stuff that you like digging around in, man, there's so many easy places to go to just find that information. You can go to a ton of different websites. One that we frequent is called Blue Letter Bible, blueletterbible.com. You go there, you type in the verse. When the verse comes up, you hit a button that says a little C on it, and all of a sudden, all the words in the verse get broken down. Here's the English words, here's the Hebrew words, here's all the different meanings, and here's where they get, you know, translated in different ways throughout the scriptures. And so it can be very, very helpful. And so as you look at this particular Hebrew word, zamavet, it gets translated into English in terms of different words all throughout the Old Testament. For example, Psalm 44, verse 19. It says, but you crushed us. You made us a haunt for jackals and covered us with deep darkness. Now that phrase, deep darkness, is the same word, zamavit, that gets translated as shadow of death before. Or look at Psalm 107, verse 14. It says, he brought them out of darkness in the deepest gloom and broke away their chains. That phrase, deepest gloom, Hebrew word, zamavit. See, zamavit carries with it this idea of the shadow of death. Not death itself, of the shadow of death. This deepest darkness, this deepest gloom. And you see, when you understand the different kind of layers and nuances of the word, it helps us, as we think about this verse and as we reflect on it, put our emphasis on the word shadow rather than on the word death. Because in our here and now, again, we know what it's like. Imagine you know what it feels like to walk through valleys of deep darkness, to walk through valleys of gloom, to walk through valleys of uncertainty, not quite sure of what's on the other side of this valley that you find yourself walking in. Because part of you never imagined yourself there, and part of you only can see darkness, and so you have no idea what's on the other side, and you feel like you're walking through this valley of uncertainty. And many of you know that feeling all too well. And you know exactly what that feels like, where perhaps for you, the valley that you find yourself walking in is this marriage that you've been in that it feels like it's just been eroding for years. And it just feels like there's this darkness that permeates this valley that you've been journeying through. Or maybe month by month, you've continued to watch sales figures drop in your company, and you've watched employees get let go one by one. And you found yourself just dreading the day, knowing that it's coming, when your boss is going to sit you down and let you know that you're next in line. Or maybe you've had to experience firsthand walking through this valley of watching the heart of your teenager or your young adult slowly drift away from you, drift away from God, and make damaging and difficult choices. Or maybe you've had to watch someone you love day by day remember you a little less than the day before, as things like dementia and Alzheimer's sets in, and living through the pain of feeling like that you're a stranger to the ones that you love and feeling isolated and alone. You see, but regardless of the valley, what particular one it is or what it looks like for you, it's in those moments of deep darkness and gloom and uncertainty where we will either choose to trust God, choose to trust that he's there, to trust his heart, and to pursue him and to run toward him, or we will allow ourselves to drift and let our hearts grow resentful and bitter. And I understand there's really only two paths, and uncertainty always forces us to choose one or the other. It always does. Uncertainty will force you to choose one path or the other, and while it may sound cliche, it is very true, where we have no control over what someone does to us. We don't have any control over what may happen to us, but we do have control, and we can choose how we react to it, how we respond to it. So you see, in the valley, what the challenge becomes is rather than choosing to withdraw emotionally in the valley and silently sink into a depression, or rather than choosing to let this unresolved anger just kind of boil beneath the surface where you end up biting certain people with your words and making these cutting remarks and being very short-tempered with the people around you, or rather than playing out these revenge fantasies in your mind over and over again, or rather than numbing your disappointment and isolation with some kind of retail therapy or food therapy, you know, rather than choosing that path, God invites us to choose a path of trust. To trust him that he's there, that he's present, that he's working. Even when all the surrounding circumstances may not lend evidence to that reality. And understand, sometimes our reactions don't actually feel like a decision that we're making. There's part of us that we think, you know what, I just can't help it. I can't help the way I react. I can't help the way I respond. That's just the way I am. And so please hear me on this, because what I'm about to say is I'm not talking about specific medical conditions that can definitely play a role in these types of choices at times. But for the majority of us, I want you to understand that it is possible, it is very possible to choose a destructive response so frequently that it no longer feels like a decision when you choose it. That it becomes this automatic reflex in how we respond to uncertainty and how we respond to negative circumstances, that we start to think, you know what, that's just who I am. That's just how I'm wired. But you see, we're invited to live out a reality that says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. That word evil carries with it this idea of malice and disaster. I will fear no malice. I will fear no disaster. I will fear no evil. For you are with me. For you are with me. You see, that's the question. Will you trust that God is with you? That even though you might not feel God right now, or even though you may look at your circumstances and it feels like everything is crumbling around you, the invitation is, will you choose to trust that God is still with you? With you as he was with Joseph, with you as he was with Moses, and with you as he was with Moses' mother, with you as he was with David, with you as he's been with his children generation after generation, with you as he promises that he will be, and that he has shown himself faithful throughout the generations. Maybe not on our timeline that we would prefer or that we would suggest, but with the hindsight of understanding that God has shown himself faithful, will you trust that God is actually with you, even when life is not going smoothly, even when it's been months, even when it's been years? Will you trust that God is present? Will you trust that he's at work, even when the surrounding circumstances may not lend evidence to that reality? You see, if you're a follower of Jesus, or maybe you're just considering trusting Jesus, understand, this is the story we belong to. This is our story, where God meets us in the midst of disappointment and disaster and uncertainty, and he invites us to trust him, to cooperate with him in making beautiful things out of us, and to cooperate with him in bringing hope and goodness and beauty out of the mess, while continuing to transform our heart and our character in the process. But understand, we always, always have a choice in that, of whether we run toward God and run toward him and pursue him when things get difficult, or whether we choose to run away, whether we choose to distance ourselves. And so we continually have to remind ourselves of what God's heart is toward us. We talked about this last week, that what's at stake for many of us is, what really is God's heart toward us? What's God's nature? What's his character like? What's he actually feel about us? And look at what David writes in the rest of their verse 4. He says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And he says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now, a rod and a staff are interesting items that a shepherd would carry. This is what a rod looks like and a shepherd's staff looks like. And shepherds, even still to this day, carry items just like this many places throughout Africa and many places in the Middle East where these scriptures were birthed out of. And a shepherd would carry a rod like this. And a rod is used primarily for protection of the flock, where when you would have predators that would come and they would try to attack the flock, that this rod could easily be thrown, and it's used to either try to shock and scare away any predators, or if need be, defend off predators from the flock. Because he carries this because he needs to make sure that the shepherd is protecting the well-being of the flock. And he also carries this staff. And the staff is used primarily to guide. And so there's times where he'll pat the sheep, you know, on one side or the other to try to direct them in this path where he's leading them. And then times when he has to use it as a tool of correction. When a sheep begins to wander off and move in a dangerous direction off the path, then he takes it and he brings the sheep back. And there's moments when maybe a sheep is hurt or a sheep needs some extra, you know, attention where he'll take it and he'll bring it and he'll nestle the sheep into himself with his staff. And as David is painting these pictures for us of what God is like, he's saying, I want you to know that God's heart, that it's for you. And he's having to remind himself of this picture and imagery that God's heart is for him, that it's for us, that God's heart is to protect and to guide. At times, God needs to correct, and at times, God needs to discipline, but his heart behind all of that is one of love, protection, and guidance, where God is always leading us toward life. He says in verse 3, to guide us in paths of righteousness. But understand, what David is not saying here is he's not saying, you know what? You just ignore the rawness of your emotions or ignore the rawness of your feelings and you just need to pretend like none of that really ever happened or you need to pretend like everything is okay and just kind of suppress it and shut it down and put on your smiley, happy Christian face and just keep moving forward. That's not what David's saying. So the reason I love, you know, other psalms that David writes, and particularly Psalm 13, look at what David writes when he just pours out his heart before God and he says, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? See, again, this is not, you know, always up and to the right in terms of the graph of life scale for David. It's not saying, oh, these are the stories of people that everything always turned out great and perfect. Listen to the anguish in his voice. He says, look on me and answer, O Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. My enemy will say, I have overcome him. My foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. See, what I love about David is he expresses this honest, raw feeling and emotion. He expresses his hurt. He expresses his pain. He expresses his confusion. But what we also see is this determination in David to fight, to trust. That in the midst of the valley, in the midst of the uncertainty, in the midst of the unknown, he refuses to let emotions dictate his actions. He refuses to let emotions and feelings be his only guide, but rather with this determination, says, I will fight to trust. I will choose to trust that you are with me, that you have not abandoned me, that you are not absent. And I will refuse to let go of hope. And understand that is the very same thing that God invites us to do as we walk through the valleys of deepest gloom and of darkness, of God inviting us to not try to pretend like everything is okay, but where we can express honestly our emotions and our fears and our confusion and to come before God, but with a determination that we are going to trust, that I will choose to trust, I will choose to sing, I will choose to remember how you have been good and how you have been faithful. I will not let my thoughts about you and your heart for me be determined solely by the circumstances that I see myself around, that I see around me at this moment. I've been thinking a lot about my dad the last several weeks, and many of you know from the e-news I send out that my dad suffered a severe stroke a few weeks back, and so I just want you to know that what I'm walking you through today isn't some preacher speak for me. This isn't some theory that I'm walking you through. But this is something that, man, I'm walking through this with you as well. I understand right now in this moment. Many times other points in my life, and I understand right now what it feels like to walk through a valley that you're not quite sure what's on the other side. And I was reflecting back this past week to one of the earliest memories I have of my dad. I was in third grade, and our elementary school every year had a fall festival. And in the back corner of the hallway, of the fifth grade hallway, there was a haunted house. And when I was in first and second grade, I'd always chickened out. But man, I really wanted to go because that's what the cool kids did. You know, the cool kids would go through the haunted house. And I had determined this year that I was going to go through. And my dad said that he would go through it with me. And I remember standing at the entrance to it. And every time they would open this door into one of these rooms, all you could see was just this pitch black. And I remember just being scared out of my mind. And right before we walked in, my dad turned around and he said to me, he said, "Jonathan, just stay close to me and keep walking because it's worse if you stop." He said, you know, because when you stop, they just whoo, so they descend on you quickly. So son, just keep walking. And so I remember grabbing on to the back of my dad's shirt and tucking my head into the back of that shirt and having this mixture of emotions where one part of me was deathly scared out of my mind. And somehow at the same time, I felt incredibly secure because I was with my dad. And I knew my dad's heart for me to protect me and that he would guide me through. And as we were walking through, my dad, he would just turn around and kind of look over his shoulder since I was tucked in so well, and he would just whisper, "Jonathan, just keep walking. Just keep walking." And you see, perhaps the most important truth in this verse is at the very beginning of what David says, when he says, "Even though I walk through the valley." Even though I walk. You see, for thousands of years, this journey of following God has been known throughout the world as the walk. For generations upon generations, the Hebrews have referred to this journeying with God as the walk. And so wherever you find yourself this morning, whatever valley you find yourself walking through, understand, I'm not up here offering some kind of preacher formula for how to make your circumstances all turn around. It's where all of a sudden you have to do is, all you have to do is pray this prayer, all you have to do is, you know, give this amount of money, and suddenly everything's going to be turned around for you. But rather, my goal is to remind you, as just a fellow journeyer with you, but also as your pastor, that regardless of how bleak or dark or uncertain your circumstances are, that God is not absent. That he's not absent. And that as you face a decision about how to react to whatever it is that you're going through, that you would resist the temptation to zone out, that you would resist the temptation to check out or to numb out, and that you would trust, you would make the choice to trust that God wants to grow something beautiful in you, something lasting in you, something deep in you, that God indeed desires to make beautiful things out of us. And you see, we know this. All of us know this. We forget it at times because we want to avoid it, but instinctively and by experience, we know this, that there are parts of your heart, that there are parts of your character that can only be developed in the midst of pain, that can only be developed and shaped in the midst of uncertainty. And so rather than run away from the opportunity, that you would embrace it, you would cooperate with what God wants to do with you in the here and the now, and that you would trust that he's there. And that no matter how dark it gets, that you would trust that God won't let go. He won't let go of you, that he's present. And he's active, and even though the surrounding circumstances might not lend evidence to that reality, that he's there. You would choose to trust that, and in turn, you would choose to not let go either, because you have a choice. And you would choose to trust, and you would choose to not let go. You would choose to hold on to your dad's shirt, to tuck your face in, and you would choose to keep walking, putting one foot in front of the other, and that you would understand as you leave here today that perhaps the most worshipful thing you could do today, the most worshipful thing you could do all week long or your entire life, is to choose to walk, to choose to not stop, to choose to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and to choose to trust that God is there, that he's present, that he will not leave you alone. So as we close, I'm just going to have Stephen lead us in a song that my hope is will just serve as our prayer together. That this would be our prayer as a community as we sing it and allow God to shape our hearts through it and let these words resonate not only in our hearts now, but throughout the months and the years to come.